Welcome to the Yoga Inspired Life podcast. I'm your host, Shayla Quinn, and together we'll go on a journey of self-discovery as we explore all of the inner workings of what it means to live an inspired life. Join me for solo episodes and conversations with special guests for real, authentic deep dives into all things yoga, wellness, self-love, mindfulness, and everything in between. If you're ready to get inspired, learn, grow, evolve, to connect, and up-level your life, then you've come to the right place. I am beyond excited that you're here. So let's dive in. OMG, you guys. Today's episode is absolute fire. I have an astrology-filled episode for you with teacher, astrologer, coach, and writer, Julian Elizabeth. Julian is deeply inspired by the study of consciousness, nature cycles, and the body's ability to heal itself through trauma and the challenges of life. Her offerings derive from several traditions of yoga, astrology, and Eastern medicine, with an emphasis on strengthening your connection to the natural, intuitive world. I seriously loved this conversation that I got to have with Julian. She is just incredible, honestly. And while this isn't the first time that I am learning about astrology, it truly was the first time where I felt like I actually understood it and was able to grasp the information. And that is just a testament to Julian's incredible teaching abilities and talents. We seriously talked about so many different things in this episode. We covered birth charts. We talked about the different aspects of birth charts. We talked about retrogrades, Saturn returns. She shared some ideas for full moon and new moon rituals. She even got into my birth chart a little bit. We talked about horoscopes. We answered some of your questions from Instagram. Like, I can't even, it's just insane. Like, she honestly was so generous with all of her incredible insight and information. I just know that you're gonna love this episode. So without further ado, let's jump right into today's episode with the lovely Julian Elizabeth. Julian, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you on.
Thank you. I'm really stoked to be here.
So I've already given you a little bit of an intro to my community, but I would love for you in your own words to just kind of introduce yourself and share who you are, what you do, and what inspired you to get into astrology.
Awesome. Well, hi, everyone. My name is Julian Elizabeth, and I have been teaching yoga, studying yoga, astrology, and nutrition for probably a little over 10 years. And it's sort of been like a building block of tools and practices that have helped me to really understand who I am, accept who I am, and step into my power and myself as a whole being. So I got into astrology professionally after several years of coaching and teaching yoga and really kind of looking for a way to explain and understand the way that I saw and see cycles. So everything that I've been teaching over the last 10 years has really been about looking at the cycles within ourselves, within nature, and now with astrology within the cosmos, and kind of piecing it all together, weaving it all together to understand how we are patterned beings and how we can understand ourselves as unique beings by looking at those patterns. So astrology has sort of been this larger study to, like I said, bring it all together. And for me personally, it has been the most profound tool to understand myself and to really like myself and love myself. I have some hard aspects in my astrology, and in my younger years, it's sort of been hard for me to understand. Why am I so hard on myself? Why am I so critical? Why do I, you know, push myself to the grind so much that resting is sort of something I've had to learn in my life? And so astrology has helped me understand that, and then also understand the balance of it, so I can find rest and I can find nourishment and I can find ways to love myself in ways that feel authentic.
I love that. That's just, yeah. You're speaking my language. I'm like, that sounds just like me. That's amazing. So what exactly is astrology?
Yeah, such a good question. So the way that I explain and understand astrology in one way is to think about the fact that at the moment that you're born, or previous to that moment that you're born, that you take your first breath, you are not exposed to gravity in the same ways that you are once you come out of the womb, or you come out of your birth mother in the way that you do and take that first breath. So that first moment when you're exposed to gravity, the gravitational pull and the force of everything is sort of imprinted into your body and into your being. And this is your first imprint and understanding of, I'm home. I'm here on earth to learn these lessons that I am meant to learn. And so when we look at astrology, it's important to understand that we're not just looking at a piece of paper with a bunch of lines on it. We're actually looking at a map of the solar system as we know it to be within relation to our earth. And so that first imprint of gravity has in it the relationship of the earth to the sun and the moon, as well as everything we know and don't know within the solar system. And there's also the imprint of those planets and stars and gravitational pulls in relation to each other. And it's in the relation to each other. For example, where is your sun? Where was the sun when you were born? For you, I know it's a Taurus. And where was the moon when you were born? For you, it's Leo. Well, those two things, Taurus and Leo, they have a relationship to each other. They form what's called a square. Now that's going to present you a certain energetic imprint. And from that energetic imprint, we can know that certain lessons that you might be learning might come because of certain conflicts or challenges. We don't necessarily know specifically what they are. It's not really a psychic study in that way. However, we can really understand in retrospect some of the challenges we may have in relation to that aspect, as well as how we can overcome it. And I like to say turn it into a superpower, because something that is at one time challenging ultimately eventually can become your superpower if you consciously use it.
Absolutely. And the more knowledge that we have about ourselves and the way that we work on an energetic level, the better, right? Knowledge is power.
Exactly. That's it.
You read my birth chart before, and I'm very intrigued by this. I feel like I could get it read every single day and still have questions.
You could. But
what exactly is a birth chart, and what does it mean to get your birth chart read? And just give us the rundown.
Yeah, totally. So the birth chart is that moment that you took your first breath, or that you first came out of the womb, that gravitational imprint that I was talking about. So that's that moment. And in astrology, and when you're getting your birth chart read, it's most, you're going to get the most relevant read or the most specific read if you do know your birth time, because that is that moment of first breath, right? And so what we're looking at is at that moment, well, what constellation was your sun in? Like I said, Taurus for you. What constellation was the moon moving through? Leo for you. And then what constellation was rising on the eastern horizon? All of these things are going to play into certain aspects of you. Now, the birth chart is, from my perspective, a map of archetypes for you to understand yourself. Like you said, knowledge is power. So if we understand a planet like Venus has to do with relationships, love, beauty, art, it's going to help us to understand how you perceive those things and how you embody those things when we know where and in what part of the sky that planet was in for you.
So interesting. So yeah. I feel like oftentimes people will ask, well, what's your sign? And typically just say, like for me, Taurus. So that would be my sun sign or my moon sign?
That would be your sun sign.
Okay. Taurus. And so then you also mentioned then that my moon sign is Leo. So what are the importance of the two, and what's the difference of the two?
Such a good question. So your sun sign is the solar month that you were born in. So right now we're in Sagittarius season. And after Sagittarius is Capricorn season. So it's about 28 to 30 days that the sun is moving through that specific constellation. Remember, it has to do with what's actually going on out in the world, right, or out in the universe. And so your sun is going to tell us a lot about your ego, your identity, maybe your essence without all of the other layers that are very, very relevant to you. But maybe like hindering or blocking that true essence from shining through. So Taurus as an archetype is a really powerful manifester, really grounded energy, very, very sensual. I know Tauruses to have like a really keen sense of smell, really like great eye for beauty and aesthetic, really connected to their senses, loves good food, loves, you know, soft things. Am I describing you?
Sounds like me. Exactly. If my mom is listening to this, she'll laugh because she knows I have the absolute most keen sense of smell and taste. Mm-hmm. I'm like, exactly. So this was in a bag with a banana. She's like, how did you know that? I'm like, I can taste it and I can smell it.
That's it. Exactly. So that sun sign is going to tell us like the essence of you, who you are without all of the programming and the layers. And so we can know so much about someone just on their sun sign. However, that's not it. That's not the only thing. So your moon sign is based on where the moon was traveling when you were born. And that changes every 2.5 to 3 days. So for you to be born with a Leo moon, well, there's only a 2.5, 3 day window for the moon to be in Leo because it takes the moon 28 days to complete a full cycle through the zodiac. So the moon is a little bit more closer to the heart. It's more personal. The moon has to do with your intuition. It has to do with your emotions, how you might feel about certain things. It can sometimes tell us about your relationship to like the more feminine elements of experience of life. And it does relate to the mother as well. So sometimes in a birth chart, we can know challenges with being a mother or your own personal relationship with your mother. There's a lot more of like kind of secretness to the moon sign. It's more private.
Interesting.
And then the third one that gets talked about a lot in astrology is the rising sign or the ascendant. Now, the ascendant is based on your birth time, and it is the most specific aspect to you because it changes every 2.5 to 3 minutes.
Oh, wow.
So for you to be born with, I'm going to peek at your chart quick. So for you to be born with a Sagittarius rising, there's about a 90-minute window for that to happen. So if you were like, oh, I don't know when I was born, it was sometime in the morning, it might not be specific enough for us to know what your rising sign is.
Yeah.
And once we do know the rising sign, we know a lot about your personality. So the rising sign is a bit of a reflection. It tells us sort of how you see yourself, how you see the world, how the world sees you. All of these like very specific reflection sort of subjects, like I think of it as if you put on a pair of sunglasses that have like rose colored tint or an orange tint or something. When you look out at them, you see the world through that orange tint.
Yeah.
But the world also sees you as somebody who wears sunglasses with an orange tint.
Right.
And we all have different like understandings of what that might mean.
Mm-hmm.
So a Sagittarius rising in terms of personality can tell us that you're a risk taker, that you are likely very optimistic, that you are possibly adventurous, or you could enjoy travel. It will generally tell us that you're this expansive personality. Cool. Does that sound like you?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I think that battles my the Taurus layer of myself, where I'm like, do we want to be adventurous? I don't know. We kind of like the way things are, you know. I'd like, why, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right. You're finding the balance.
Yeah, but then there is like a sudden moment where I do feel like a flip is switched, and I'm like, boom, going. But it's something I feel like whenever I seem adventurous, I I am being adventurous, but I've also been like stewing on it like a crock pot for a while, like really pulling it over. And then all the time, I'm like, boom, let's go. And when I decide, it's like game over.
Totally. And this is the thing about the rising sign being more so sometimes how other people will perceive you. So you might see yourself as this Taurus that's very fixed and has to like have a bunch of yeses before taking the leap. But what someone else sees first is, wow, she's really adventurous. She's bold. She's always growing. She's always expanding. She's putting out new content all the time. And so the more you start to see yourself through the lens of that rising sign, the more integrated you might start to feel, and perhaps the less time it takes for you to take that leap, or more the closer you feel to that embodied yes of like, okay, this is the right move for me.
Wait, I love that. This is so cool.
Yeah, so the rising sign is like amazing. Such a magic.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing.
The more nuanced understanding of astrology, incorporating all the planets and all the aspects, can be so much that a lot of times when we do think of astrology, we're just thinking of what's your sign.
Totally.
Because it's easier. It's quicker. Yeah. And it's still relevant. But if we were to think of a 28-day cycle, a 2-day cycle, and a 2-minute cycle, and each of them defining you, that 2-minute cycle is going to be the most specific and the most relevant to you. All of them will be relevant.
Yeah.
But we kind of want to see in a birth chart reading or in working with astrology, we kind of want to understand how they all knit together, because You can't just take one aspect and say, oh, I'm just a Taurus.
So true. Oh, this is so good. So just to simplify it one last time, your sun sign is typically how you see your personality or how you perceive yourself.
It's like your ego or your identity.
And then the rising sign is how other people might perceive you, which is still like an aspect of who you are, but.
Yeah. It's like your personality or your perception.
And then your moon sign is your
emotions.
Okay, great. Love that. So those are probably the three aspects of a birth chart that would be a great place for people to start with.
So much information just from those three. Yeah.
And then knowing those things, like how do you integrate the information that you learn through investigating? Is that the right word? Researching or
investigating all of it.
Investigating. What are some ways that people can integrate what they learn into their daily life?
Such a good question. So I'll use myself as an example. I am a Virgo sun. So that is something I've always seen myself as resonating with. I'm very organized. I can really be super analytical. Sometimes I can be a know-it-all. I can be a little bit bossy. And I've also, again, I just get really tuned into the earth, into cycles. And that's a very Virgo kind of thing. I really want to help people. I want to serve. I want to see patterns to create efficiency. This is all very Virgo kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm also very ambitious. I also like really want to bring information to the people. I want to create things that are helpful for people on a scale that can really lead to big transformation. And that is my Capricorn moon. So I have this moon in Capricorn who is very ambitious, who really like feels in my heart that this information can do big things for people. I'm also a really skilled communicator. I love talking to people and I love talking to lots of different people. I have a ton of interests. I love being connected. And that is dictated by my Gemini rising. So my ascendant is Gemini. Gemini is very communicative, really talkative, sometimes kind of gossipy. Now, I didn't necessarily embrace that part of myself when I was younger. I was more insecure, kind of a Virgo trait sometimes. I was relatively shy. I didn't put myself out there to talk in front of big groups. But I was usually really good at it when I had to be. So when I was put in front of a big group, or I had to audition for like a school play or something like that, I always got the role that required the most lines, that required me to be in front of people. And once I started to kind of embrace and understand this Gemini part of myself, I was able to work with fear that I had around being on stage or being in front of people or using my voice to serve and support and create. And as I've integrated the three together, I know that I can use my voice to be of service in a big way. And that's sort of like a progression of those three aspects.
So interesting. So your birth chart tells you so much about your, or can tell you so much about your personality and the ways that you perceive things and such. But what are some other things that you can learn by getting your birth chart read?
You can learn a lot. You can learn your relationship style. I use birth chart readings to help people establish healthy boundaries in their relationships, to establish routines that work for them, to help them understand challenges in their home life, challenges in their professional life, ways that they can find success using their voice to enact social change. I've worked with people to use their birth chart to understand how to make money, to give reason as to why maybe they're struggling with money or they're struggling with any given issue in their life. So we can really use astrology to understand. I mean, I hesitate to say everything, but I've yet to find something that could not be brought to the surface through astrology, at least to have a conversation to give perspective.
Wow. And so, like, I'm curious too. So your birth chart is basically a snapshot of the day that you came earthside. But how do you tell, like, at what time during your life you're experiencing what? Like, I feel like you're able to make predictions based on this chart, but it's how are you able to see like a timeline of that if it's just the way things were at that time? Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
The thing about astrology, I'll just say before I answer your question, is one question always leads to another question, to another question. And so it becomes this long pathway of like, how do we do that? And what does this mean? So it's totally natural for there to be like a ton of questions when we're trying to deconstruct it. The way that you can use astrology to understand some things that are happening now in relation to you is looking at transits. And that's what we call it, is we have the moon today in Cancer. And you have your moon in Leo. Well, what does that mean? What's the relationship of those together? As the moon in a day and a half moves into Leo, you're going to have a different type of energetic experience because the moon now is in relationship to the moon where it was when you were born. That's going to have an effect on your nervous system because your nervous system was established based on that initial imprint on the day that you were born. So we're always looking in relationship. Astrology is all about relationships. Where was this? Where was that? How are they communicating with each other? Is that a supportive influence? Is that a conflicting influence? What can we learn from what's going on now?
Yeah. Wow.
The easiest way to sort of track this and to start to understand this in your own body is to notice and check in with where the moon is over the course of a month. So we just had on really early on Monday morning, the 29th of November, just to give it perspective, we just had a full moon. And that full moon was when the sun was in Sagittarius and the moon was in Gemini. And so when those two bodies, planetary bodies, sun and moon, are exactly opposite each other, we have a full moon. And now the moon has moved to the next sign, which is Cancer. And that has a different type of energy to it. So if you were to try to learn astrology and understand the way that the moon moves, you could check in with yourself. Okay, the moon is in Cancer. I know Cancer to be more about being home, a little bit more sensitive, maybe a little bit more emotional. wanting family, wanting comfort. So how does that show up in my own body? Am I a little bit more emotional? Do I need to take care of myself a little bit more? Maybe I need to go take a bath today. And then the moon moves into Leo. Okay, am I feeling brave and courageous? Am I feeling more activated? Check in that on that information. So you start to gather information. Well, next month, you get the same pattern all over again. So then you know again, okay, the moon's in Cancer. Do I feel similarly? The moon is in Leo. Do I feel similarly? And so through those learnings, you can start to really have an embodied experience of astrology.
So we're not even just talking about full moons. We're just talking about each month the moon moves through each sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have a new moon.
Yep.
And we have a full moon. Yep. And they're about 2 weeks apart. Mm-hmm. So for a moon to go from new, which is when the sun and the moon are in the same place, to full, which is when they're opposite, we have to go through six signs.
Right.
And then to go from full moon back to new moon, we have to go through six signs. And it's always the same pattern every single month. So it's a cycle that's happening 12 to 13 times a year, always in the same pattern.
I love that. That kind of ties into what you said in the beginning about finding cycles. And I love routines and cycles. So this is something I could get on board with.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so helpful. I mean, I studied the way that the moon was moving for about a year and a half, and I did it as a daily journaling practice. So where's the moon? What phase is it in? What are the emotions that I'm having today? And did it, what happened in a notable way today? Did anything big happen? And I tracked it every single day. And I started to see some patterns. I saw patterns around when I was menstruating. I saw patterns around when I would be mad at my friend or like having conflict with somebody that I cared about.
Yeah.
I saw patterns as to when I work best, when I'm most organized, when I really need to turn off devices and really take care of myself in a different way. So it's really, really given me a blueprint and a pattern to start to practice my life.
I love that. Guys, we should all be doing this, tracking, yeah. Tracking in cycles. Do you think it would take a full year for you to figure out how accurate your energy is throughout these cycles? Or I feel like that's kind of, I don't know if people could actually like stick with that routine for that long.
It's a lot to do it for a year. I'm a Virgo Capricorn overachiever. So you probably like two or three
I mean, I'll
months.
Do it, but you know, but what's the minimum amount? You think 2 or 3 months would give you a pretty good idea?
I think 2 or 3 months can give you a really good idea because it's three cycles. Mm. And if you pair that with understanding your chart and knowing like where each of these constellations falls in your blueprint, then you can start to kind of like, oh, okay. You know, the moon is in Gemini and that's my personality. And so this is a really, you know, good time for me to think about PR, for me to kind of like go out into the world and share my voice.
Yeah.
Or rather, when the moon is in Sagittarius, that's a part of my chart that deals with relationships. And so maybe this is a good time for me to do some relationship work or connect with my partner or think about, you know, who I'm in a one-to-one relationship with and maybe, you know, do a little work there.
Yeah. This is kind of off topic, but not really, because you did bring up menstruation. What does it mean when you have your cycle with a full moon? Does it mean anything?
It's really common for women to sync up with the sun or the new moon or the full moon. And it's also probably equally as common to not be synced up with it. But at any given time, you might find that maybe a couple of moon cycles a year, you're synced up with the full moon or with the new moon. There's mm-hmm. some varying perspectives. I like to think about it as the full moons are really representative of shedding, of letting go. And so if your moon cycle comes during the full moon, this might be an indication that you're really releasing a lot of energy during this cycle. Mm-hmm. You're letting stuff go. When it's synced up with the new moon, it tends to be symbolic about setting intention, about being reverent and, you know, kind of envisioning. And so you can use that time if you are menstruating during that time to set intention to kind of think about what you're creating or what you're birthing into the world.
I love that. Full moons and new moons are typically of that nature, right? Full moon is letting go and releasing, and new moon is kind of setting intention, planting the seeds, kind of a thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And so both can be really beautiful times for gathering. Full moons tend to be like celebratory gatherings, releasing, singing, dancing, chanting. You can see it in a lot of different lineages and practices that honor the moon. New moons tend to be gathering times, but in a little bit more of a ceremonial or reverent way. So there's always a shedding aspect of it, but it's a clearing the field to plant seeds. So oftentimes we think of new moons as times to kind of sit around and talk about the themes that are arising as a way to project goals and intentions out.
Cool. Is there a particular way that you ritualize the full moons and new moons?
Yeah. I do new moon circles every month. I hold them virtually now. I was holding them in person in Los Angeles. So my method of working with the new moons is to gather together to share and understand the astrology in a really helpful way, you know, to understand some of the big questions that are coming to the surface during the specific month, some of the other astrological aspects that are happening in conjunction with the new moon, and to, you know, use that as a framework to think about the next 6 months of your life. And so they tend to be a lot of sharing, a lot of journaling, and intention setting.
Cool.
Full moons, I don't personally do anything, but I always try to find a teacher or a guide on a full moon who I can read from or learn from or, you know, practice with or something like that.
I love that. So you're still doing new moon circles currently virtually?
I am. Yeah. The cool. Next one is November 13th or the December 13th. No,
so I just had to look down at my calendar. I was like, November 13th,
2021. I'm still in November. Okay. December
13th. I'm still in March. So we're good. I'm like, where did this year go?
Oh my gosh.
2020. Right. What happened? Oh my gosh. Okay. So I love that. The reason why I asked is because I just wanted to remind the audience that I will link everything for you in the show notes so that they can find you. And maybe we'll all join in on your next new moon ritual. I would love that. I want to talk about retrogrades and Saturn returns.
Awesome.
Let's start with retrograde, shall we?
Yes.
We hear about Mercury retrograde, and it's just, you know, it's like, I would love to know, just in simple terms, if possible, what it is and how it affects people. And also, like, does it affect everyone? Because I also was told one time randomly when I had my birth chart read by somebody else many years ago, this is probably the only thing I took away from that session, was that Uranus is more of a planet that has more effect or pull on me than Mercury. Somebody said something about like Uranus retrograde, and I was like, oh my gosh. So I'm just curious about the retrogrades. What's going on?
Yeah, such a good question. Every planet retrogrades. Retrograde, I'll try to explain it in the most simple way. From the perspective of what's actually happening to that planet, it is a time when that planet is as close as it will be to the Earth. And in that, we think of how the Earth revolves around an axis, right? Well, so does every other planet revolves around an axis. And so when you have two planets revolving on an axis tilted towards each other at a certain degree, what it appears to be is that that planet looks like it's going backwards.
Mm.
Okay, so I'm going to break that down a little bit more.
Okay.
Have you ever been stopped at a stoplight and the car next to you starts to go forward and you kind of have an experience where you're like, oh my God, am I going backwards?
Yeah.
So that is like the phenomenon of retrograde. It's like two things are moving at different rates and it appears that one is going to go backwards. So the planet's not actually going backwards. It's an optical illusion. But from the point that we are measuring it on Earth, It is moving backwards in relation to us.
Interesting.
So here's where we can take it into the philosophical or into the cosmos. We all need time for reflection and processing. We all need that. No matter, you pick a subject of your life. If you don't give yourself time of quiet, stillness, peace to contemplate it or to let it kind of like percolate a little bit, eventually the tension builds and builds and builds, and the universe sort of forces us to take a step back anyway, right?
Guys, I have my palm on my forehead. Yes, it's right. It's true. It does happen.
So retrograde is a time for that to happen. It's a time where we need to be still. We need to be that car at the stoplight, and we need to let the world move in all the ways that it needs to move. And so retrogrades, if used appropriately, can be that built-in time from the universe to reflect, to process, to allow, to surrender. And because every planet has a retrograde, we can do that in all these different areas of our life.
I love that.
Yeah. So now here's the thing. We don't really have built-in vacations in our world, right? Like the government doesn't say, oh, it's Mercury retrograde, here's 3 weeks off,
right,
to think and reflect and journal and all of those things. So a lot of us don't pay attention to that. It's not really built into like the ethos of our current modern world. And so this is where we get, to speak to Mercury retrograde, these periods of time where like our technology doesn't work or communication doesn't work, or we have all these breakdowns. Well, it's because the energy is telling us slow down, reflect, chill out. And if we were to just in the back of our mind, store that permission slip, Mercury's retrograde, I need to spend a little bit more time reflecting. Maybe it's not the best time for me to put a bunch of things out into the world. Well, then you've given yourself that permission and you're working with the energy instead of against it. And likely you're not even trying to force your technology to work. You're not trying to book a bunch of plane tickets. You're just, you know, chilling. And if you take that intentional pause or you intentionally slow down, chances are your technology will be fine. Your communication will resolve itself. Things will be okay. It's just a reminder to slow down.
I freaking love that. I've never heard that before. That makes so much sense.
It's so good.
It's like flow over force. This is my motto all the time.
Exactly. Such a good motto too.
But yeah, that's fantastic.
Mercury retrograde happens 3 times a year for 3 weeks. So 1/3 of the year, Mercury's retrograde. So it's really not something to be afraid of. It's something to learn how to use. And that could be a good time for you to take a look at the previous 3 months, like everything that you put out into the world and everything you created. Well, what worked? What didn't? What did I enjoy? What felt, you know, horrible to do? Okay, what's my game plan to move forward? So use those 3 weeks to reflect and to plan, and you're good.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's this business about the Uranus retrograde? Did you look so at my chart? Does that make sense? Or is that just a bunch of hooey?
I could see what they were saying for sure.
What were they saying? Tell me. Tell me about myself. What's wrong with me?
Yeah. So it's interesting to me because you are actually born with Mercury retrograde in Gemini. And so your Mercury is in Gemini, which totally makes sense to me why you're a voice in the world, and you write and you create content and you have a podcast. This is very Mercury in Gemini, content creator type of energy. And because you were born with Mercury retrograde, you're actually likely not as affected by Mercury retrograde because you have a built-in system inside of you to already be doing some of these
things. I'm already backwards.
Like, I'm just kidding. You're already reflective. You're already probably like looking at everything you do, thinking how you can improve it. You're a planner, all of these things. So that's sort of like built into you. You also have Saturn retrograde. I know we're going to talk about Saturn, and you have a lot retrograde. So you have Saturn retrograde, Uranus retrograde, Neptune retrograde, and Pluto retrograde. I generally see people have 3 to 4 planets retrograde in their chart. It means you're a reflective person. That's the simplest way that I could explain it, is that you process things internally, you care about personal growth, you care about personal transformation, and you likely don't project it out onto other people or out into the world. You're more of like, this is my responsibility. How could I have done this differently? How can I grow as a person? And so a lot of the work that you do, at least in the younger parts of your life, is much more internal before it's external.
Yeah, I'm extremely reflective. It's almost exhausting sometimes. I'm like, why are we, can we move forward?
Get out of your head.
Literally. Yeah, that's so interesting. Mm-hmm.
So wow. What the astrologer maybe was hinting at is that you have Uranus in your second house, which is traditionally the house that I would look to Taurus for, and you have your sun in Taurus. So it's so complex that I feel like, without like going so deep into your chart, it might be hard to explain, but Uranus can have a powerful force in your chart because of where it's placed. Mm. I'd have to spend time with it to understand what makes the retrograde, maybe why that astrologer said the retrograde would be stronger than Mercury.
Interesting.
But Uranus is placed in a part of your chart that's pretty powerful.
So we gotta rewind for a second. You said my second house. Please explain.
Oh, girl. Okay. We might have to come on for a second episode.
Yeah, part two. Actually, I would love that. Let's just set that up now. We're doing
it. Yeah, perfect. Please,
is there a way, like, what do we, second house?
All right. So that rising sign, the ascendant sign. So for you, it's Sagittarius. For me, I said it's Gemini. Mm-hmm. Well, that establishes what is called your first house, because that is the sign, the constellation that was rising on the horizon when you were born. So it forms the like imprint, like, this is my first house. This is my personality. That's like the first thing that starts to get developed when you're growing as a child, right? And so that first house establishes this question of, who am I? And that is the, you know, adventurous part of you, this Sagittarian who's expanding all the time because of the reflection nature that you have. So after the second house, after the first house, there's the second house. And the second house is, what do I value? And we can't really know what we value until we know who we are, right? We don't really necessarily know what's important to us, what we want to invest ourselves in, until we know kind of like who we are, what makes us us. And so there's 12 houses. Each house is a different constellation. And so you have Capricorn in your second house. And so there's a value system that might be based on ambition and growth and creating things and building systems and structures. And I can see that in the work that you do.
Wow, so interesting.
I know. And so then the third house, and I'm just going to go up to like 6, because we could go all the way around.
Yeah.
So the third house is, has to do with communication. It's how you speak. It's how you use your voice. It's how you share. And so your third house is Aquarius, and Aquarius can be a visionary, can be very much future oriented, or really care about being of service to the whole community. And so it's about sharing a big message that might be, you know, general enough that enough people can come in and hear it and be moved. Your fourth house is home. It's very personal to you. It's sort of like who gets in the front door, who you are at home, right? It deals with security. Not everybody gets to see you when the camera's off. right? Mm. When the show is over, who are you?
Right.
And so for you, it's Pisces. It's a dreamer. It's sensitive and artistic and kind of like this old soul. And that's like kind of the secret you, or the at home you. And then we have your fifth house, which is like, how do I play? It's how do I create? It's you on stage. It's you, in the ways that you like to flirt or date or like, you know, be like your fun self. And that's Aries. So it's really adventurous. It can be like innovative, a part of you that's just a risk taker. Like, I'm just going to take a leap. I'm going to step out and play in this way. I haven't tried this. Let me just go do it. And then we have the sixth house, which has to do with how you build a life for yourself. So it's very mundane. It's like your routines and your rituals and your health. And this is where we find Taurus. And so nutrition and health and the aesthetic of your home and the way that you present yourself visually, all of these things, they're you. And you have a lifestyle brand. Like, you've built yourself as a creator of lifestyle, and you help to inspire people in that way just simply by living your life. You want me to keep going?
I mean, kind of. And also, like, everyone needs to get their birth chart read by you.
Oh, this is everyone fantastic. Should get their birth chart reading.
Like, this is really, and it's, of course, it's like, I mean, you haven't really told me anything that I don't know about myself, but it is helping me mm-hmm. more deeply understand who I am. And it also, there's just like this therapeutic, comforting feeling of someone who doesn't really know me at all, but knows me, you know, it's like, yeah, that's me. Oh, yes, that's me. Okay. Yeah,
it's reflection. Oh, we need it, good. Right? It's relationships and reflection. And like I said, in the beginning, I don't consider astrology to be a psychic science. I'm not looking at astrology or using it as a tool to tell you things about yourself you don't know. I'm using it as a tool to illuminate things from a different perspective or a different angle than you could see without support.
I freaking love that.
Yeah, it's so good.
So you don't have to necessarily do all of the rest of them if you don't want, but if you do, you should do it.
I can do it really quick. That's
or no just tell us what each one is. I think I'm just fascinated.
Well, your seventh house is relationships.
Oh,
and yeah. And for you, it's Gemini. And so I could see that being that it would be probably a relationship that's fun with someone who's adventurous and maybe like you two can explore curiously life together. Could be really fulfilling and nourishing for you, like wanting somebody who is curious and excited about life and sort of has like this adolescent, bright, sparkly energy to them because they're like, ooh, that's fun. Let's go do that. Let's try this. And that can light up parts of you that might feel heavy or like really stuck in the vastness of life. It can help you kind of like pull you back down into this playful part of you. And also you can think about it in terms of any kind of one-on-one partnership or relationship. So if you're thinking of collaborating with someone in terms of business, well, it would probably be good for you two to have really good communication and for talking with this person to be fun and you both feel really creative and lit up by each other. So a Gemini type of relationship is generally pretty playful and curious. So your eighth house is, it sort of deals with loss. It helps you to understand what you value when all of the other things are taken away. So when, you know, we're looking at it in relationship, we're always looking in relationship. So with the eighth house, we want to think about it in terms of, you know, if I lost all my money, who would I be? If I didn't have anything to prove of myself, like a degree or a successful career or anything like that, well, who am I? So who am I with nothing? And it helps us to understand our wholeness when we can understand our emptiness, because most of life is empty space. And so it really helps us to dig deep into seeing ourselves for less of what we have to prove ourselves. It's a little bit deep. This one has to do with like death and rebirth and grief. So the eighth house can be like a shadowy house where we don't necessarily always like to visit. Some people do. Not everybody does.
Yeah.
So your ninth house deals with philosophy. It deals with what's your truth? What do you personally believe? And for you, it's Leo and your moon is there. And so there's this unconditional love that is like the basis of your belief and your philosophy of life. And you like just want people to feel the warmth of love and you want them to feel seen and bright and all of that. And so that is like understanding your philosophy. So if you noticed, as I've progressed, we've become like a little bit deeper as we've gotten into the houses. Like now we're talking about philosophy. Previous to that, we're talking about death. And so through the death process, we become reborn. And then we understand like our own philosophy of the world a little bit more. Yeah, it starts to get really deep and heady. We're almost done. Remember, there's 12. So when we get to the 10th house, we care about what we're building. And so in the 10th house, we understand, what do I need to do to put a roof over my head? Because the 10th house is opposite the 4th house. Remember, the 4th house is where you were when you were at home. In order to feel safe at home, you got to do something to put a roof over your head, right? In one way or the other. And so the 10th house helps us understand who you are in the public world. It helps us understand what we could do for work, perhaps, what kind of career would suit us. And for you, it's Virgo. And Virgo is like very organized, detail oriented. Like I see the way that you are building this like beautiful world for yourself, world for all of us that has like nutrition and yoga and health and this and that. And like, you know, this is a good company to work with. And this is something that interests you and astrology could help you. So you're using this very Virgo lens to put all the pieces together. And like, if you look at how detail oriented everything that you do is, it just makes perfect sense.
So type A.
It's another word for it. Spoken from one Virgo to another. So your 11th house has to do with your social groups. It has to do with maybe what causes you care about, like the activist within us, how we show up in groups. And for you, it's Libra. So there's this feminine, very Venusian type of energy to how you serve groups and how you show up in the world, social causes or social themes that might be relevant to you might be very Libra, which has to do with like, I think of Libra as the hostess of a party, like looks amazing, welcomes everyone, created like a special drink and like lots of hors d'oeuvres. And so really just wants to create a setting that people feel really good in, that people feel like safe. You want to see people connecting and sharing and growing together.
Accurate.
And then we get to the 12th house. So it's the final house of the zodiac. And this has to do in some ways with the end of life. It has to do with what we really care about when everything is shut away, right? We think of ourselves on our, you know, 100th year of life towards the end of life. And it's like, my family and my experiences, like the little tiny things that we thought mattered when we were 20 don't matter when we're 100. And so the 12th house really is about unconditional love. And it's about a connection to spirit. And so we find our spirituality here. We find kind of who we are when we are far removed from the spotlight and far removed from the mundane world. And so it's nature and love and, you know, the kind of the bigger philosophical themes of life that we might think about at certain times. And for you, it's Scorpio, which is interesting because Scorpio is like in the shadows and, you know, it might be like that shadow work part of you just requires a little bit more removal from life. Like you have to really kind of go very far away to go deep into those parts of yourself.
That's so
true. To Bali or something. I don't know.
It's true. I did go to Bali almost 2 years ago for a month. For and that it's reason.
Through the 12th house, we find ourselves.
So interesting. Yeah. When I'm dealing with a lot of heavy emotions or need to process through trauma, I feel like I need time and space and I need like to remove myself from, it's so bizarre, but see, this is great to know. It makes me feel a little less weird.
Exactly. I mean, it helps us understand ourselves. And there's this Sagittarius part of you that has to go on a quest, because what do you do with that journey that you go on to go deep or to go deep within? You bring it back to the people, which is what Sagittarius does.
That is
so it's
literally
through that growth and shadow work and all of that that has to be done in private. You know, the 12th house sometimes in ancient astrology or in older forms of astrology is where they would put insane asylums. And so if we think about that in terms of a metaphor, it's like we have to be taken away and put away in order to like go a little bit insane. But what do we do with that growth? Because ultimately it is growth. Well, for you with a Sagittarius rising, you bring it back to the people as wisdom. And then that becomes your new philosophy. So it all starts to fit together as one big cycle with a lot of moving pieces.
I'm seeing the bigger picture. Amazing. And I'm seriously, I just want to say thank you because this is so great. This is the first time that I've actually been able to understand astrology.
And visualize it.
Yes. So I feel like my community is going to be right there with me. And this is so important because I do think that this is astrology can be such a great tool that we can use to enhance our lives and better understand ourselves and all of the amazing things that you said at the beginning when you were talking about what inspired you to get into it. And I feel like it's accessible for all of us, but it's hard to access when you don't understand it, you know? Yeah. So this is great.
And it can be really, really complex. Like we just went through super quick, a lot of themes, and I had you kind of moving your mind through all these different aspects of yourself. So it can be a lot. However, just understanding some of the basics and just an initial birth chart reading can do so much of that, can give you this blueprint that you're like, okay, I don't have to worry about that as much. I don't have to try to compare myself to this other person because I'm unique. I'm magic. I'm psychic. We all are. And so if we can start to see where and how and when, instead of why do they have that and I don't, it just brings everything into more wholeness, and we can recognize that we're all whole, we're all complete, we're all everything. And it for me allows so much more of an internal focus instead of this external comparison that I think just keeps us all separated.
I couldn't agree more. I love that. I do want to quickly, if it's possible, so I don't know if we can go through it quickly, the Saturn return. I'd love to just briefly know what that is and
so Saturn return has to do with the planet Saturn, and as an archetype, Saturn has to do with boundaries, with authority, with everything that we would use to govern ourselves using structure, or a system. So for example, time is a structure that we organize ourselves around. So Saturn can sometimes be called the Lord of Time. Karma is a system that we can all be bound by. If I do this, then it can sow a seed that further down the line creates this, as an example. So Saturn can sometimes be tied to karma. Mm-hmm. Saturn is also tied to anything that is a system or a structure. So that is education, government, finances. So all of these different ways that we deem ourselves powerful or not powerful, or we deem that we have access or we don't have access. Okay, so the Saturn return. When you're born, Saturn is in one place, part of your chart. And that is, in general, can tell us a lot about how you establish authority. And when we're kids, authority is usually established by a family of origin or whoever's our caregiver in the first years of our life. And as you move through life, you're learning about authority and you're learning boundaries in expanded ways. So as you get a little bit older, your authority figures expand from just your caregivers to maybe your extended family. Maybe it's teachers or community members, police, the government. So we start to see these forms of authority kind of moving through our life. So by the time you get to be 28 or 30, you reach the time of your Saturn return. And in general, what can happen is you look at your life by the time you're 28 and you're like, do I like this? Is this what I want? I followed all the rules. Remember, Saturn has to do with rules. So I followed all the rules, and a common story of rules that we have in like our modern our modern world is like, okay, I got good grades in school. I was a nice person. Maybe I went to college. Maybe I got the job. Maybe I married my high school boyfriend or my college boyfriend or whatever your story might be. And then you get to 28, 29, 30, and you look around and you're like, wait, do I like this? Is this the world that I want for myself? Are these my dreams? And so it can be a time of reflection and a time of deconstruction where we're kind of resetting a cycle and we're claiming authority for ourselves. For some people, this can look like, yeah, I freaking love my life. I've done everything that I've wanted so far. I'm in total alignment. And then your Saturn return might be just a little bit uncomfortable, like rearranging some things. For some people, it's looking around at your life and saying, oh my gosh, I don't like any of this. And then you get fired from your job and the universe sort of takes over. You get fired from your job. You break up with your partner. You have this dark night of the soul. You face a health issue. All of these things can start to happen in order for you to realign and rearrange in a way that's more authentic to you. So I think of Saturn as like that harsh teacher that you have when you're younger, who ultimately, when you reflect back on it, was really hard on you because they really saw your potential. Instead of that teacher who was like just so nice to you and just gave you the easy A and you liked them and you had good vibes with them, but they didn't challenge you to really see more of yourself. And so we can think of the Saturn return in two ways. You can think of it as this time of punishment, like, oh, I'm going through this really hard time and astrology is like cursing me and all of that. Or you can think of it as like, I'm in a time of grand lesson learning and grand realignment in order to become more of who I am, in order to own more of my life. And either way, whichever way you choose to see it, I have found that usually by age 32, 33, 34, you look back at that period of time and you're like, all of that had to happen. All of those punishing times, that heartbreak and that health issue and all that actually made me more of who I am, made me stronger, created this whole new career, this whole new opportunity for me. And so I always encourage people to think of it as a really positive time, even though it's challenging, because we really grow the most through our challenges.
How long does a Saturn return generally last, or is it different for everyone?
So the way that I measure Saturn return and the way that a lot of other astrologers will measure it is when Saturn entered the constellation that it was in when you were born. And so for you, and anybody who is born in like late 1987, 1989, 1990, will have Saturn in Capricorn. Mm-hmm. And that started on December 2017. And Saturn leaves Capricorn on the 15th of December this year, December. 2020.
Wait, 2017 it started.
Yeah.
That was a massive time for me in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the year leading up to it was as well, but like, wow, that's so interesting. That's so when I really pulled the plug and took the leap or whatever you want to call mm-hmm. it. Yeah. It was major
time for me. So for you, I would bet that 2015, 2016, 2017, 18, 19, 20 have been big years of growth for you. And you're like moving into a time where it's almost like the construction is done, and now it's, and like, you know, the plasters on the wall and the layer of paint, like everything's sort of been rebuilt. You're living in a new house, and now you can be like, come over, come yes. into my new house. And like, listen to my story of the house that I just built for myself. So you're like moving out of a time of reconstruction into a time of like storytelling and sharing what you've been through and why this journey has been so big for you.
So interesting. Thank you for explaining that. I love that. Okay. So I put up a question box on my Instagram and had people ask me some questions for you. So I'd love to ask you some of those for them and for myself. Who are we kidding? Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you follow Western or Vedic astrology?
I follow Western astrology, but I also am really inspired by Vedic astrology. In the most simplistic way of explaining the difference, it's two different perspectives, meaning Western astrology looks at the point where you were born on Earth as the center of your solar system. So we're looking at Phoenix, Arizona as your center. And then we're looking at all the planets in relation to that. Mm. Vedic astrology looks at the sun as the center of the solar system, because it is. And then where are all the planets in relation to that? And so it's just two different vantage points.
Interesting. Okay, this is not a question from Instagram, but I just have a question suddenly. Uh-huh. Do you think that our souls choose when we come into this earth? Or like, for instance, my due date, I was 2 weeks late. I was supposed mm-hmm. to be born the end of April and I didn't want to come out. They had to pull me out. They had to pull my ass out. They were like, come on out. I was like,
Taurus, so, straight up Taurus.
Yeah. Does that mean anything? Or like, you know, a lot of times humans, you know, we're not born on our due dates, or like, also like, does the day of conception make a difference of when we're like, am I making sense? I'm very curious. Do we have a choice? Are we choosing this, these certain signs and all of that stuff?
My personal belief is yes.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a philosophy. It's a philosophical question. And some, you know, I know human design plays into pre-birth, and astrology certainly has many aspects to it that indicate big lessons of this lifetime, big lessons of past lifetimes. So for me, I think you're born at the exact perfect time to learn the exact lessons that you're meant to learn. So, you know, some people ask the question, well, what if I was born via a C-section? Or what if mm-hmm. I was born premature or late? The moment that you come out of the womb, however you come out of the womb, and the moment you're exposed to gravity as a result, from my perspective, is the time that you are meant to be born to learn all the lessons you're meant to learn.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Speaking of lessons, someone looked at my birth chart one time and told me that my lesson in this life was relationships. Is that something that you can tell by looking at a birth chart, or was that just something random that I'm making up in my head?
It can be something that you can see in a birth chart.
Like, do you think that we have a primary overall theme or lesson in this lifetime?
I do. Yeah. And I think that it can show up in so many different aspects, and there's, you know, so many facets to what that could look like. If I were to look at your birth chart, I would say that one of the big lessons that you're learning in this life is surrender and safety, and really like knowing that you're safe in your emotions, you're safe in your experiences, and that like to really nurture and nourish yourself and your family, like those that get to come into that safe space with you.
That is so accurate. And I totally agree with you. I too think that we have like an overall theme or lesson, and that would be really powerful to know by having your birth chart read, you know, to just to make sense of some things.
Yeah. And that's the piece that I really focus a lot on in birth chart readings, especially the first one with people. You know, everyone kind of, a lot of people come to a reading with a specific question or like a series of things that they want to know, whether it's money or relationships or career or something like that. But there are a couple of key points that I think are just really important to understand yourself in a larger scale. Like, what are the lessons that I'm learning in this life?
Yeah.
So that's always something I try to slip in there somewhere.
Yeah. I remember you doing that when you read mine, and I loved that part of the reading. Okay. Sorry. I just got way off on another street. See, this is why I like, but I love talking to you because I think it's just so interesting and you explain everything so well.
Thanks.
Another question from Instagram. How can you incorporate north and south nodes in your shadow work and life path work?
Mm. Well, this dovetails so perfectly with what we were just talking about.
Oh, really? Good.
So north and south node are key points that I look at when I'm looking at someone's life path. Again, like, what lessons am I learning in life? And a lot of times when someone asks about life path, they might be asking about career. Mm. I'm thinking more of like, what are the big things I'm learning? How am I growing in this life? I might learn that lesson from the gas, like pumping gas at the gas station. I might be able to act in that embodiment at the grocery store. I might be able to build a career out of it. But that north node in your chart is a gravitational pull that is telling us, like, where are you going? What direction are you meant to be moving in your life? Your south node is a gravitational pull that's really asking you to release and to let go. You've already learned that lesson. You can bring that wisdom with you forward, but you don't have to get stuck there continuously trying to learn what you've already learned. So the north and the south node, I think, are key to understanding your astrology.
Cool. I got this question a lot. Do you have any predictions for 2021?
Yeah. 2021 is a year that I liken to a renaissance. And it's not that it's going to necessarily be this year that's like jubilant and buoyant and happy. There's still going to be a reconciliation of a lot of things that have come to the surface in 2020. It's definitely a year of reconstruction. However, what I see is that there will be a lot of innovation, a lot of people taking responsibility for what they're creating in the world and how they're contributing to their communities and to the global community, or at least the national community, wherever your nation is. You know, we have some aspects that are going on early or late towards the end of this year, early into 2021, and then throughout the year that really point to us working together and us really rebuilding in ways that reflect the values that we believe we need. So it might be a pulling away of our attention at big structures like the government coming in to save us and to protect us and to have our best interests in mind, and more of us looking to our local community and into our chosen community to build and to create systems and structures that sustain us authentically.
That sounds promising.
Yeah, I think it's really promising. I don't think it's going to be easy, but we're strong enough for it. You know, if 2020 has taught us anything, I hope it's taught us that we are always presented with what we can handle, even if it seems like we can't handle it. We can always get through things. I think we're ultimately more compassionate than maybe we gave ourselves credit for. We're more resilient than we have given ourselves credit for. I think this year has been an ultimate gift through a lot of challenge.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Okay, last couple questions. Where in our chart can we look for guidance in career?
So looking for guidance in career, you can look into your 10th house, which is a house of career and public life. Okay. It's the one I said, it's how you put the roof over your head. You look into your 10th house.
Yeah.
For your career, you can also look to Saturn, which can teach you like how your authority figures. You can look to mentors here. You can understand like how to establish structure. And then you can also look to your north node. So what are some of those lessons that you're learning in this life? Finally, a final aspect that you can look at is your midheaven, which in a lot of charts will be noted by MC. And your midheaven is sort of a point in your chart that is the most northern point that really kind of shows you where some skill can be, like, you know, where you can get a lot of attention for a specific skill set.
Cool. So you have a lot of options, a lot of places.
You got a couple of options. Yeah, I would say 10th house and midheaven are the two.
The next question is, how important is astrological compatibility when it comes to seeking a partner?
Good question. Depends on how you're looking at it or how you're looking for it. I believe that we can be compatible with anyone given the right lessons that you're trying to learn with the person. Now, certain aspects in relation to others can indicate that you're learning a common lesson together, or this person is here to teach you this thing and maybe you're here to teach them this thing. We can definitely look at whether you've had past life relationships with a certain person by looking at your charts together. However, I would say that if you're just focused on sun sign, like he's a Scorpio and I'm an Aquarius, it isn't deep enough. to determine whether or not you'd be compatible together. There's a lot more specific aspects like Venus, for example. How are your Venuses reacting, relating to each other? How is your sun relating to their moon? So there's a lot more nuance to looking at compatibility than just the simple sun sign understanding.
So basically, before we date anyone, we need to get their birth time, their exact birthplace. We need to look at their birth chart, okay?
Exactly. Call your mom, get your birth time.
And I'll let you know if I'm available on a Friday, okay?
Exactly.
I love that. Water and air compatibility. What's your viewpoint on that?
Again, it's another one of those, like, well, there's a lot of nuances to the compatibility of two signs together. Water and air can be a challenging match together because what does air on water do? It makes waves. And, you know, what does air and water coming together do? It creates a storm. So there's some metaphors that we can look at here. But in general, water signs or where you have water in your chart is where you can find emotions and sensitivity and, in a lot of ways, intuition. Now, air is more communication. It's more intellectual. So when we're looking at emotions and intellect, sometimes they're not so compatible, right? So if you are a very emotional person or very watery person, and you're trying to sort of relate to somebody who's more intellectual, it could feel cold, or it could feel like they're not compassionate for you or empathetic towards you. Not necessarily true. They just might process information differently.
Yeah. Last question for today is, how accurate are horoscopes that we read? You know, like, is there any evidence to show that they're actually accurate?
Horoscopes can be accurate based on how you interpret them. And this is why I spent so much time with us talking about the rising sign or the ascendant. Because if you were to read your horoscope from the perspective of your ascendant, so for you, read it from Sagittarius. So if you were to read the Sagittarius horoscope, it will likely be more relevant to your life and what's going on right now.
Interesting.
Because remember, it's a 90-minute window. It's very, very specific to you. And so if you were to read all the horoscopes for your sun, your moon, and your ascendant, you'd have a pretty three-dimensional perspective on what's going on for you right now and have some good insights to make some decisions based on. If you were to just read it for your sun sign, you'd have, like, it might be a little bit relevant. It might not paint the whole picture. So you could be like, yeah, okay, cool. But if you were to read all three, if it's a good horoscope, I would suggest, or I would think that you might be like, I know exactly what I need to do.
I love that.
Exactly what's going on. Yeah. So it's really based on the reader.
Where's your favorite place to read your horoscope, or do not do that because you're an expert? Maybe you don't need to. Oh, do you? Okay, cool.
I do. Let's see. I like, there's an astrologer whose name is Rick Levine, and he is super old school. He's been an astrologer for like 45 years. Mm-hmm. So I read his astro updates. Chani Nicholas is one that a lot of people know. She has a super big following. I will read hers very broadly. I think she's got so much wisdom, but she's also appealing to a really big audience. Mm-hmm. So I like to take that in. Who else do I like? Virginia Rosenberg is an astrologer that I really admire. She writes from the perspective of activism. So she always gives really good insights as to like how to take control of your life or take hold of your life. So I really like her insights too.
Amazing. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much for doing this with me today.
You're welcome.
This was so fun. Oh, I don't want it to end, but share with everyone where they can find you. I'm of course going to link everything in the show notes.
Amazing. But yeah. And you can find me on Instagram, and I also do horoscopes every new and full moon. And whenever there are big astrological shifts happening, I'll throw in some specific horoscopes. So you can find those in my stories. And then on my website, julianelizabeth.com, you can find all my astrology offerings, as well as the work that I do in yoga and meditation and nutrition as well. And I have a couple of great offerings coming up over the next 2 months with the new moon eclipse that we have on the 14th of December. I'll be holding a new moon circle. And then moving towards 2021, I have some specific one-on-one 2021 readings and special workshops on the astrology of the year coming. So I'll send you the links to all those.
Yes, please. And I'll put them in the show notes. Yay. Amazing. Thank you.
You're welcome. And then I'm going to share with you just a code. Anyone in your community who wants to do a natal chart reading, they can get a little discount from me.
Fabulous. Yay. Yeah. I will put that all down in the show notes. And that's a wrap on another episode of the Yoga Inspired Life podcast. I hope you got something valuable from it and feel empowered to take inspired action. Thank you so much for tuning in and spending time with me today. And if you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I loved creating it, then please subscribe and leave a review. And if you know of anyone that would benefit from the podcast, I would love it if you would share it with them. I always say that we rise by lifting others, and this is a totally independent podcast, so every little bit of support truly means so much to me. If you're looking for more, let's connect on Instagram. You can find me at Shayla Quinn. I hope you have an amazing week. Thank you again for listening, and I'll catch you next week.